Joining us live in the studio is Martina Doyle from the Hub Ireland. Martina, first of all, you're very welcome to Northside today.
Thank you.
I want to start by just explaining to people that last Friday, in the pourings of rain, I took myself off into town, not to do shopping or even to have a pint. No, I visited the offices of the Hub, and an hour and a half later, I got back into the car, and I have to say that I was humbled, inspired, and maybe a little depressed in equal amounts. And we'll come to that later on, Martina. But first of all, can you tell me, when was the Hub founded? Why was it founded? And who founded it?
Well, Tony, the Hub was founded around 2013, long before I came on the scene, I must tell you. And it was founded by a married couple who had been living their life as normal, paying their mortgage. The man had had a business, the lady had worked, everything was great. And then 2002 came, and suddenly banks were calling in loans for the business, calling in loans for the mortgage. And the couple found that they couldn't cope, and there was no way that they could reach an agreement with the bank to be able to pay and to live as per normal. It got to the stage where the couple received what is known as a 7-day letter, which terrifies the heart out of people. It basically is a letter from a bank which states you have 7 days to leave your house, pack up everything and go. Well, we now know that it is only a letter and it does not mean that you have to do anything like that. But at the time, they went through an awful lot of feelings, as you would. They even considered, as they tell you themselves, they hid the ropes, hid the bottles, went through all the different stages, tried their best to engage with banks, the whole lot. Nothing was working. So they rang various organisations, got no joy. So they decided it was either go forward or stop. So they decided to start researching themselves online what was going on. So the Hub Ireland was literally born in a back bedroom in Kildare.
And as you know, from 2013 on, you know, this has been getting, I would consider, maybe not the media coverage that it should be getting, and we are delighted to have you with us today to I suppose, give it the media coverage that it deserves. But, you know, we are at a situation here where we are listening to, particularly the likes of Father Peter McVerry, we're listening to Inner City Helping Homeless. And both of these organisations are doing unbelievable work for people who find themselves in the homeless situation. But the Hub are trying to get in, for want of a better way, I suppose, of putting it, Martina, you're trying to get in ahead of those organisations and
prevent
people from becoming homeless.
Yeah, like, it's very interesting. There's loads of news out there about homeless people. I mean, the imagery is sleeping bags, hotel rooms, all that type of thing. What's not being mentioned, and it's very, very peculiar, is that there are 100,000 plus mortgages in arrears at the moment. And this is what the impact, this is the impact from all of that. And not only that, that there's apparently another 100,000 mortgages on the cusp of being in arrears. So, you know, you're looking at the TV, you're looking at newspapers, you're reading online articles, but the mortgage crisis is not being mentioned. And it's very, very strange, because it is, it's the basis of what is really going on.
Because, and of course, sorry, Martina, for cutting across you, but this comes on top of, and you know, it's I suppose, I think it was somebody once said that you're better off being a lucky general than a good general. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I won't say we're lucky to have you here. I wish to God we didn't have you here, that we didn't have the need to have you here. But, you know, this interview this morning comes hot on the heels of figures released yesterday, which show that there are 3,105 people homeless at the end of February, which was the month, of course, that we had the election in. And that is showing an increase of 3% in 1 month. That amount of homeless. Yeah. And, you know, unbelievably and shockingly, 1,881 of those homeless are children.
That's correct, yeah. Well, I mean, they're the figures that you're being given about homelessness, but you're not being given the figures about people who are living in abject poverty and misery because they're trying to pay unsustainable mortgages that they can never actually pay, because that is the way that this all occurred. Around that period of 2007-2008, the country was awash with money. If you remember, there was houses on every corner of Dublin being built. There was housing estates being built all over the country. Places that were questionable, should they ever have been built. There was people who bought into ghost estates who never actually ended up living in them, but the banks are still chasing them for the money that they borrowed. Negative equity is another huge thing. Basically, there was a financial collapse and, you know, we bailed out the banks, but nobody bailed out the people who are the victims of all of this.
Yeah, it seems to me slightly ironic when... I won't say slightly, it seems to be to me very ironic that, okay, we'll take this through, it's a quick walkthrough of it. The banks got into difficulties. The people of the state were called upon to help bail out the banks, which they did. The banks get back on what I would tend to suggest is probably just a reasonable footing. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're anywhere near being as solvent as they would like to be, but in any case, they are back on reasonable footing. And now... they are going after the people and repossessing their houses, mm-hmm. who are the actual people mm-hmm. who bailed them out in the first
place. Correct, yeah. That's if they haven't sold them on to the so-called vulture funds as well.
Yeah, that's something I want to come to in a minute, Martina, mm-hmm. in relation mm-hmm. to that. And you are listening to Martina Doyle from The Hub Ireland. Here with us on Northside today. And of course, should you want to contact us, you can do so on 867 1190. You can text us on 087 69 44 500, or you can go online at nearfm.ie. Martina, in relation to that very fact, that we may as well come to it soon as you mentioned it, I heard an interview conducted last week with a man who I find very sensible and a very plain-spoken man, who is Conor Pope, consumer correspondent for the Irish Times. Mm-hmm. And he attended one of the meeting which I think representatives of the Hub may have been at in Portlaoise, where this was outlined as well. And he asked the question, quite rightly and quite legitimately, in my opinion, and I'm going to ask you the same question. How can you justify, or how can anybody justify, people who are doing their damnedest to repay a mortgage, and yet, and the banks, if they engage with them, mm-hmm. would actually realise a greater return, but rather than engage with the people, they're quite prepared to drag the people through court, mm-hmm. costing them, because we all know a trip into the High Court is yeah. or even the Circuit Court is an expensive day out, yeah. and then sell the property mm-hmm. to a vulture fund for less than what they would have realised had they gone down the initial yes. route. Has anybody put an explanation on that for us?
Well, the only explanation, I think the best way of describing that is, you now live in an economy, not a society. And an economy just cares for money. A society cares for people. I presume that, you know, looking at it logically, it seems obvious to me that what Ireland is going to turn into is a rental haven. And a lot of these vulture funds at the time, I think, were buying up, in my opinion, all the, as many properties as possible. Because rental is very lucrative in Ireland, as you know. I mean, try and look for somewhere in Dublin to rent. You'll be lucky to get somewhere for under, a box for under 40 and 1500, you know. So, like, if you look at the logistics of buying back homes or repossessing homes and selling them on to vulture funds, the vulture funds are not buying them for no reason. They have to have an incentive. And I think that's the incentive. You know, people always say, especially younger generation, I have no problem in renting if it's affordable. But it's not in Ireland. So I don't know if that answers your question. If you're asking why did the banks sell them on and why did the vulture funds buy them, that would be my take on it.
Well, I would imagine that a vulture fund, being the financial institution that it is, the obvious answer is that they can see a profit in it.
Absolutely. Well, that's why you have people living in hotels and B&Bs at the moment.
Astronomical cost to the taxpayer as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the whole thing. And I have conducted several interviews in relation to this, yeah. and it's mind-boggling.
Absolutely.
Because at no stage during any part of the process, now, number one, I can't make sense of it, but I'm not directly involved in it.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm just a radio presenter.
Yeah.
But in saying that, you know, the people at the coalface, the people in the Hub, mm-hmm. Father Peter McFerry, mm-hmm. Inner City Helping Homeless, any of the organisations,
yes, yeah,
can't make sense of what is actually
happening. We can't make sense of it either.
And what seems to be more frustrating is they can't get the answers.
No, there is no answers. I was at that meeting in Portlaoise as well, and, you know, the anger in the room was just unbelievable, and the frustration and the misery, and people who have lived good lives all their lives. Don't forget, people are being made to feel like criminals now. People have to go to court who may have never even stood inside a court house in their life, and they are afraid of the process. They don't understand the process. They get a repossession order, so they go to a registrar's court, and a registrar is not a judge, but to the ordinary person in the street, they might as well be a judge. And people don't understand the law, and therefore a lot of the time are so terrified that they just bury their head in the sand, and before they know it, there's a repossession order on their house or an eviction order, which is frightening. That's something I would like to raise. I don't know if you've heard of the 2013 Land and Conveyancing Act, the amendment to it.
No, but I have a feeling we're going to hear all about it.
Yes, it's kind of, I mean, I won't say jokingly, but it's referred to by a lot of angry people as the eviction bill. It basically gave the banks, in my opinion, an easier ride into repossessing homes. And what it did was it made people have to put everything on affidavit. Now, most people, unless they've been through the legal system for whatever reason, haven't a clue, no more than I would have had, you know, what an affidavit was, which is a sworn statement. So that's the first hurdle. People think, I can't afford a solicitor. I can't even afford a bottle of milk. How am I going to afford a solicitor? So they go into court totally unprepared. Depending on the registrar around the country, you know, you could get one who'll be understanding and help you, but some of them are just, you know, you better get out and pay this mortgage or else. And when that is said to them, they leave there totally either thinking, okay, we're going to get a chance here. Sometimes they're given 6-month test case, it's called, where they're told by a government organisation, we'll pay, say, £1,000 a month for 6 months. They do this, come back then, and they're told, now we want the full amount. So they're damned if they do, and they're damned if they don't. This is the problem.
And of course, this is where the hub comes in. Martina, mm-hmm. just before we continue with the discussion or the interview, I have to put it to you that I would imagine that if the banks were represented here today, they would say, well, look, the bottom line here is you signed on the dotted line for a mortgage, therefore you were legally obliged to discharge that mortgage. What would you say to that, Martina?
What I would say to them is we're living in unusual times. You know, 25 years ago, to get a mortgage, you would literally have to have every little bit of information on yourself. You had a bank manager who was on the corner. They signed your mortgage. They gave approval. It was all done. If you missed one, let alone two payments, they'd be knocking on the door to you. The unusual times that occurred in the Celtic Tiger was what I'd call predatory lending. We have had instances of people who come into the hub who may have not been employed, who, you know, went in for a loan of 40,000 to make a new kitchen. We're told, I'll take 100. If you remember at the time, we had a Taoiseach saying, buy, 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 property is the way to go. There was housing being built everywhere. People were buying abroad. Like, it was totally reckless lending at the time. And you have to question why. How could somebody with no means of employment get loans of 100,000, 200,000? Well, in my view, it was against their home. And if you want to be cynical, were they watching the homes from a distance and saying, secure against the homes and then come back and take the homes? Because that seems to be the only conclusion that I can see logically to all of this. Sit back, come back and take the homes. If you can secure property, it's a profit for life, rental-wise.
Yeah, and there is a school of thought, of course, Martina, that says that, you know, as you call it, reckless lending, mm-hmm. that it is, while it could barely be described as being legal, it certainly isn't moral.
No, definitely not.
But of course, you know, models don't butter parsnips down in the court in front of a judge.
That goes back to my earlier thing. This, we're living in an economy now, not a society, you know. But it's the taxpayer who takes the burden on, ultimately, no matter what happens. Because to put people out of their homes, somebody has to take them in. And it's the taxpayer. So it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and of course that brings us right back to the hub and the function that you perform, Martina. Now, I mean, we are going to frame this against, number one, sort of the brief summary and outset that we've mm-hmm. given here. But I suppose we're going to have to change tack slightly, Martina, in mm-hmm. relation to the way we want to do this in this discussion, because based on those figures yesterday, you know, I would suggest to you that far from being in the middle of a crisis, we're only at the start of it. If the figures that you're presenting in relation to people who are in distressed mortgages, mm-hmm. I mean, if you throw another 100,000 onto the figure that's there already,
absolutely,
this is going to be unbelievable.
Yeah, a volcano. It's going to erupt.
And meanwhile, the people who can actually or should actually be doing something about it seem to be sitting on their hands. I've seen nothing.
There's nothing being discussed by any of them.
Like, we seem to be tinkering around the edges of this, but we're not getting into the nub of the problem.
Well, you see, the whole face on homelessness, as I said earlier, is sleeping bags and doorways and people in bed and breakfasts. It's not addressing the root of it. And the root of it starts at, even if you are renting, your landlord may be in financial difficulty with his or her mortgage. So you become a victim of that. So it all, you know, it all correlates together. And you're absolutely right. The politicians are not mentioning mortgage distress, mortgage arrears, anything like that. And it's crazy because that's the nub of it. That is the whole nub of the problem, you know.
Well, speaking of nub,
yeah,
I am, I'm living in Dunamead.
Right.
I took out a mortgage in 2005 or 2006 for a property that somebody told me was worth 350,000. That's costing me whatever it is, $2,000 a month, $2,500 a month. Yep. I now discover that this said same property is worth 150,000. I've lost my job and I've no way of paying my mortgage. And I get one of these letters and I get court dates, etc., whatever else that goes along with it. And I go to the hub. Right. What can Martina do for me?
Well, If you're at the 7-day letter stage, as we call it, or the 10-day letter, they're terrifying letters. You'll have got the little reminders, your mortgage is overdue, you're trying your best. Some people will pay what they can and do pay what they can. So regardless, they get the 7 or the 10-day letter, which basically says, we're taking your house back. We get phone call then, somebody in tears at the other end of the phone. They're saying, oh my God, I'm going to have to leave the house. What will I do? I have 4 kids, blah, 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 blah. No, you don't. What you do is you come in and see us. Now, if you get a repossession order, you will be served a repossession order by a solicitor for the bank. And people think, oh, that's the end. I'm finished now. No, you're not. You read through your civil bill, it's called, and you pick out every point, because in our experience, some of the things on the civil bill are just crazy. They're wrong. There's a thing called rateable value, number one, which is actually a bone of contention in the courts at the moment. If you remember rates, they were abolished in Ireland in 1977.
Yes, indeed, by the Jack Lynch government, no less.
And what's happening is they were getting people into court under rateable value, and it was picked up by Justice Murphy. And there's an argument going on between herself and Justice White, I think it is. And there's to be a decision made on it. So that's the number one thing. There's no jurisdiction under rateable value. So you should look for that in your civil bill. So there's many things you can do. You fight your corner and you come in and see us and we have a look with it through you and we help you help yourself. We don't give advice. We're not legally trained or anything like that, but we do massive amounts of research. And basically because of Byron and Adrian, the two founder members of the Hub, you know, they have dedicated their life and soul to helping other people. And they have their own trouble as well, but, you know, they came from that horrible place they found themselves in and knew there was nowhere to turn to, because the frontline services, with all due respect, are not dealing with it. You know,
but they're not in a position to deal with it because they're overrun with their own problems.
They are, yes, in some senses, but there's still no, as far as I can see, legitimate agency out there that says to people, yeah, come in here, we'll help. You see, you're not entitled to free legal aid, you know, for mortgage arrears. I think under very certain circumstances you might be, but not particularly. So people do feel, you know, because remember, as I said earlier, unless you're a criminal, you've never been in trouble before, and suddenly you're getting a letter to go to court and you're thinking, oh my God, what if my mother finds out, my elderly father, the neighbours, we're going to be dragged out of the house, the guards are going to come, the children are going to be traumatised, etc., etc. So there's all of that type of thing as well going on in a person's head. Not to mention the other bills, ESB, gas, living, the whole lot, you know.
Well, of course, we all know, and we've covered it here on this programme, and other media have covered it, where people are making a decision, well, do I feed the family this week or do I pay the ESB bill or the gas bill? But in relation then, Martina, and I mean, it's something that people should be aware of, you know, like a day in a court like that can pass you by like that, because it's you're listening to, with all due respects to anybody from the legal profession, they do actually speak a language totally of their
own. Absolutely, yeah. You know? That's the other thing. That's what Byron always refers to. It's like cracking a nut with a sledgehammer when people go into court, because you're up against these corporate law firms. They know all the talk and all the speak. And, you know, there's you shaking, worried, not knowing whether you're going to have a roof over your head in a couple of weeks. And, you know, you're bound to be daunted by the whole process. And when you come and see us, we put you at your ease. We offer moral support. And, you know, just even that, to let people realise they have rights too. Because a lot of people feel, oh, it's my fault, I've no rights. But you do have rights. And you do have, I would tell people, research everything. Research the bank who's coming after you. Read through your documentation from top to bottom. Pick out anything. Go on the Hub website. Go on the Hub Facebook page. Start, you know, really take your case on, because nobody knows your case better than you. And nobody, that is an actual fact. Paying a solicitor, you're only paying the solicitor to fight your case. You're only paying so that person can stand up. You can do it yourself as a litigant in person and stand your ground, because there's lots of stuff we've come across in affidavits and civil bills that can be questioned and can delay until maybe this government gets their act together and starts looking after the people who pay their wages.
You are listening to Martina Doyle from the Hub Ireland, live with us here in the studio on Northside Today. And of course, don't forget that this interview, along with the other interviews we conduct, will be podcast after the programme. Martina, without tipping your hand, is there, and I know at this stage that you have gone through and seen, God know, countless people coming through the door of the Hub. You know, and I also know that a lot of the people who have come to the Hub have actually been successful in their litigation processes in the court. But are there common threads, we'll say, or common mistakes which appear in the documentation, how would I put this delicately, which are to the benefit of the people being pursued in the court? Are there common mistakes being made?
Definitely. Well, the rateable value is one. Because at the moment, rateable value is off the agenda in the courts, as there's two judges of equal standing having an argument about it. Lots of little things, like, you know, sometimes they literally say anything. You did this and you did that and you didn't do this, that and the other. And you could say, well, actually, yes, I did do this, that and the other. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. People should read through all their documentation. And if they need a hand, they can come into us and we'll sit down and go through the paperwork with them. But really, people need to take on the challenge themselves. And they can. And when actually, in our experience, when they really start to take on the challenge, they actually begin to, I won't say enjoy, that's not a good word to use, but they actually get angry and say, oh my God, I was willing to just hand this all over and I had so many, you know. Let's take, for instance, an awful lot of people will have borrowed from one bank, and then this bank has switched over to another bank, and perhaps even to an assets management company. Now, these asset management companies know nothing about you, have never met you, and yet they're trying to tell you what you did and what you didn't do. So that is an arguable point. Who said they could take over your loan, etc., etc.? All these things have to be challenged. Some asset management companies are trading without a license in this country. Some of them are insurance intermediaries and not licensed. And there's so many other things as well that you will learn. It's just that the fear stops people from going forward.
So you find that, you know, engaging with the Hub and coming in, you know, and I've seen it firsthand because I said I was in there with you last Friday and I've seen people coming through the door. But they come in beaten down and in...
Suicidal
is the word, I suppose. But they leave energised, yes?
They do. First of all, they can't quite believe it. They think these must be a share of nuts in here, you know. And then when they sit down and they look at practicalities, you know, like... you know, I'll give you one example. People don't realise that there's a service out there called Irish Mortgage Rate Check. And they hold meetings. In actual fact, there's one, I think, up in Mullingar on the 16th of April in the Granville Arms Hotel. And these people will help you trace if you've been overcharged on your interest rates over the years. And so far, they've not come across anybody who hasn't been. So that's a very important point in a court.
No, I have to stop you there now, Martina. You're saying that people have been overcharged.
Overcharged, yeah, on the interest rates. Because the, I am, yeah.
We've proved
that too.
This is unbelievable, folks. You couldn't make it up. You are listening to Martina Doyle from The Hub. It surely is, folks. This is Northside Today. And this is Donnie Darren taking you through until the hour of 1 p.m. on this Thursday. And don't forget, you can contact us on 867 1190. You can text us on 087-694-500 or nearfm.ie will get us as well. And if you have any problems in relation to your bank or your financial dealings with your bank, do contact us here, because we have Martina from the Martina Doyle from the Hub Ireland with us here in the studio, and we will, while not going into the specifics of your case, we may be in a position to help you alleviate some of your worries, some of your stress. Martina will be telling you before she goes how you actually contact the Hub themselves directly, and you know, if even if they can't do anything for you, at least the stress and the pressure that they can take off and the help they can be, you will find it beneficial. Trust me on that one, folks. You really, really, really will. Martina, before the break, we were discussing how people have discovered that they were overcharged on the interest rates, etc. Now, without going into specifics, because there are, as we know, ongoing court cases in relation to this, but maybe without naming names, you could give us a sort of a broad outline to let us know some of the things which have been going on.
Well, the interest rate check, people have been discovering that, you know, we do know, I think it was, isn't there some banker in Europe who was put to prison for manipulating the LIBOR bar? So this impacted probably on a few countries around the world, but I can only speak in relation to what the Irish rate check people have found. And they have found that people have been overcharged on interest rates over the last few years, but I don't think you're going to read about it in the papers, so it's worthwhile checking out yourself.
That brings me, I suppose, Martina, to something else which you know, I wanted to touch on briefly. With the exception of one or two community radio stations, I'm glad to say ourselves included, Conor Pope from the Irish Times and one or two other articles and sort of sideways mentioned, when you consider the amount of work the Hub are doing, and I, as far as I know, you also go to court with people and you go to as many of the court sittings as you possibly can, why do you think you're not getting more coverage?
That's a very, very, very interesting question. I suppose, logically, the reason we're not getting as much coverage is exactly the same reason why the mortgages in distress are not getting as much coverage. It's like, it's like an open secret, isn't it? You know, the problem is there, the elephant in the room, I'd call it. So, you know, they don't want to portray anything to do with it, because then it has to be faced up to. You had the Master of the High Court on the Claire Byrne show the other night, and he was talking about compulsory buying of the properties, and, you know, didn't get an awful lot of coverage either. It's as if they don't want a solution to this crisis.
But Martina, the thing about it is, like, and I mean, the reality of the situation is this, you know, Father Peter McFerry described the situation in relation to homeless as a tsunami. Now, if it was a tsunami at that stage, if you're right in what you're saying, that there's a possibility of another 100,000 coming down the track. I mean,
well, you see, it's hidden. What,
what's see, the point in not? It has to be faced, well, because the longer you put it off.
Yeah, but you see, I've always felt that homelessness is the wrong, it's the wrong description. I think what you need to call people now are displaced people, and displaced people are still living in their homes, waiting for the knock on the door to get out of their homes, and I think, like, with all due respect to Peter McFerry and all of those charity organisations, they're going down the right route in some ways, but getting back to the distressed mortgage holders, they're not getting the same coverage out there. They may be still living in their homes, but a lot of them are living in abject poverty. They don't have an awful lot of food. They don't have, you know, they're striving to try and pay as much as they can on a mortgage, or not if they can't. You remember, there's an awful lot of people have lost their jobs. I know they say there's a recovery and there's more employment, but what kind of employment is there out there? There's, you know, there's jobs that, what do they call them, zero contractors, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, like, the economy is not meeting the family to survive, particularly if they're in mortgage arrears, if that makes sense.
Now, Martina, coming back, I suppose, to more specifics, you and the other members in the hub. Number one, I presume, like, it's a totally voluntary organisation.
Totally.
Right? I've seen the subscription box. If you have a few euro to drop it in the box, yeah. If you are going in, bring a box of tea bags, bring a jar of coffee type of thing. Some of the things you've seen in the court and some of the cases and some of the, you know, let's put a try and where we can put a positive spin on this for people listening today. And as I say, if you are out there and you are in mortgage difficulties, if you contact us, we'll put you in touch with the hub, or Martina will be giving you details of how you can contact them later on. But can you, without going into specifics where people can be identified, Martina, but can you just tell us about some of the things that you yourself have witnessed in the courts and some of the successes brought about by people interacting with the hub?
Right. Well, we've people who come in to us and, you know, you might get a woman or a man. I can think of two people in my head at least. And they literally transformed their personalities, having taken on their cases and gotten confidence and began to address the situation rather than burying their head in the sand. You know, there was one lady came in one day, and don't forget, there's a tendency to kind of to categorise people as everybody who's in mortgage distress is from a certain area of society. We get professionals, we get people who, you know, have worked all their life and lost their jobs. We get all strata of society across. One of the saddest was this lady who came in one day, and she had a business and lost it, and everything started to topple afterwards. And she came in, became reassured. She was, you know, ready to take the challenge on. And in the kitchen, I just happened to say to her, do you want to have another cup of tea before you set off? Because I knew she'd a long distance, because people come from all over the country. Like, they come from as far as the Aran Islands, you know. Anyhow, she said to me, I knew she looked upset. And I just said to her, you could get a feeling from people. I said, there's something. And I said, yeah, all right. She says, I don't have the bus fare home. And I said, oh my God, that's grand, and blah, blah, blah. But that's how desperate people are. She had made her way up to Dublin, reaching out for, you know, what she could get, as in help. And it was going to be, how was she going to get home? And thank God she did ask us, and we were able to help her, you know. That's, now, she is a different woman today. She's taken on the challenge. She rings in. She sends us research she's done on banks and building societies and all sorts of things. Then we had a man, the same thing, repossession order on the home, had ignored everything. Home was about to be taken. Couldn't believe that he could. That's the other thing. Turn it up in court. If you don't turn up, it's telling them to take your house by default. But even if they have done that, and, you know, it's the 11th hour, contact us, because you can go back into court and explain your circumstances. So never ever give up. But she had done that, and now it was coming to the 11th hour, and she was nearly getting ready to leave the house. She had rang a certain government organisation who are supposed to help people in mortgage distress. The woman in that organisation had said to her, well, if I were you, I'd pack up your bags now. You don't want the children traumatised by the guards coming to the door. And she was in tears. What will I do? What will I do? Because remember, where do you go, like, you know? And came in to us, and we helped her with her paperwork, went around, lodged an appeal, the whole lot. And today, that lady, completely different, you know?
Martina, I would, in fact, I could nearly say it as a statement of fact, that there has to be a direct correlation, and I know we're slightly getting off the topic of the hub and discussing the hub, but there has to be a direct correlation between the numbers involved in suicide and the financial pressure that people are under at the moment.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, you were talking about Conor Pope there. He was at that meeting in Portlaoise, and a lady handed him a note, more or less, stating what you're stating, only she was considering it. Yeah, it's huge. I think there was actually, what the guy who called that meeting is a man called Ken Smullen, as you might be aware. And the reason he felt driven to come to do that was because in 1 week there had been 5 suicides of farmers down the country. And, like, this is where the issue broadens out. It's not just homes, properties. You know, people are losing their land, their farms. I was at a court there a few weeks ago, and a man came in, and it was a repossession against his family home on a farm. But believe it or not, this bank were trying to get the judgment on his farm and land as well. And only he was there, probably would have.
Yeah, and we had the incident day before yesterday where
cattle.
The cattle were seized and sold. well publicised because the person that's receiving into that court order was actually the winner of Ireland's Fittest Family in RTE. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. Down in Nohavel in County Cork, his entire stock were seized and sold in order to pay back a loan to the ACC,
that's
I think.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Martina, do you find that when people engage with the hub, and when the hub is mentioned, are financial institutions more inclined to deal with the people then, or do they completely blank them?
Well, it's not so much that people mention the hub to financial institutions. What we do is we help people impair themselves. So it's not really a factor. But yeah, I mean, they would be more successful because the person takes on their case and begins to answer back, as opposed to just rolling over, which is what was happening for years. You've heard of zombie repossessions. A few years ago, I remember first being alerted, I heard a man call a radio station and he was saying, you know, he said, I'm going into estates as a window cleaner and people, there's no one in the estates, the furniture is there, everything is as it is, but there's nobody living there. And this is when I first started to cop on, what's going on in this country? So zombie repossessions are where people believed when they got the 7-day or 10-day letter that their house is going to be taken, and they got the hell out as quick as they could.
Known in America, I think, as jingle mail, where you just hand back the keys.
Absolutely, yeah. But the point, bringing it back to people being successful, that's being unsuccessful because you're so afraid that you just move out. When you come to the hub, you become impaired and you fight your case. It's not that the hub fights your case, you fight your case because you build on your knowledge and, you know, you keep in touch and you get into a network of people who share information and knowledge, and then you begin to know how to use this and take on the fight. You're a citizen of this country and you've as much right as anybody else to fight your case, you know. Earlier on, as you said, big corporate legal teams, they were a problem at the beginning. But, you know, the internet is powerful because you can look up statutes, you can look up all sorts of things. So you begin to empower yourself and then you do take on the challenge and feel very proud. You're doing it for your children, you're doing it for other people, you're doing it for every citizen in the country.
Yeah, and of course the important thing as well is that in a situation like that, you may actually be responsible somewhere along the line for what is known in legal parlance as a case stated, which can be used by other people if they want to.
Well, the Murphy ruling, as I said to you earlier about the rateable value, the Murphy ruling, that would be, you know, something now that we can use all the time. And that came, Byron had always said that, you know, he couldn't understand how they were getting people in on rateable value. And lo and behold, he was correct.
Martina, before we go, because I know that you're rushing away because you actually have to leave here and go to a court case, but not your own, I hasten to add. Has the hub received any political support or endorsement from any of our politicians?
No.
Okay, this is like the quick fire round.
That's okay.
How long do you think that, you know, your presence set up? Because as I said at the outset of the programme, I went in last Friday, I had a look at the setup. I mean, it's basic.
Very.
All right.
But we feel very warm. We're very lucky to have it because, I mean,
Very warm, very welcoming and unbelievable work being done there by the team. But I mean, how long do you think that in your present format that you can survive? Because I mean, you can't go forever on tea and sympathy and the odd euro here and there.
Yeah, well, the way we work it is we take it day to day. As you know, we never ever charge, and I'd like to put it out there as well, if anybody ever tries to charge in our name, they're nothing to do with us, and we actually would appreciate if you'd let us know if this ever happens as well, because unfortunately that, you know, is one of the things that can happen. We survive totally on donations, and you know, it's to pay our ESB bill and to pay the internet and phone charges, and other than that we make do with what we can, you know.
Martina, quick question now again for you. Off the top of your head, how many court cases a week are you attending?
Well,
I don't mean you personally, no, I mean the hub as an organisation.
As an organisation, we don't have a hub in every county in Ireland. We do have one up in Galway and one in Wexford. But however, we do have Facebook pages in hubs and volunteers around the country. They go whenever they can. We go whenever we can. If you look up courts.ie every day, you will see what we call the eviction courts. You will see 70, 80 cases on registrars, county registrars days, And, you know, if we can get to as many as we can, we do. If not, we hope that the people will come to us. But yeah, it is one of the things that would be great if people would volunteer to go to courts, because in our experience, some people going to court for them is like, it's like sending them to terror. You know, mm-hmm. they come in terrified. And just have somebody sit there and be there for them. Just, you know, to give them moral
You're never
support.
On your own.
You're not on your own. You don't feel, because you're going into this packed place, a standing room only. There's barristers, solicitors, judges, registrars. You haven't a clue. You're already, after being through the mill, through all the worry that you've gone through, God only knows what other problems in life, mental issues, children, the whole lot. So just to have somebody there and to know they're there for you, and you can come back around and sit down and say how you feel and how you got on and what do I do next and where do I go next and how can I help myself next. You know, that's worth $1 million. You couldn't buy that kind of support.
Okay, Martina, I'm back to my house in Dunamead. That's I'm under pressure with, or wherever it is, or Kilbarrick or Raheny. And I want to, I'm after hearing this interview, how do I contact Martina and the Hub?
Okay, well, the Hub Ireland is on Facebook. That's the first thing. We also have, our address is 21 Little Mary Street, Dublin 7. It's just off Capel Street between the AIB Bank and Slattery's Pub, a little side street there. Our phone number is 01534 9118, and we have an email info@thehub-ireland.com. Now, the thing I'll tell you about the email is this, we are inundated with emails, and with all due respect, I know people are suffering out there. It wouldn't be personal if we didn't get back to you really quickly on an email. It's just there's so many. The best thing to do is to give us a ring and make an appointment to come in. And if you're around the country as well, oh, we have a new hub up in Mullingar as well. I should have mentioned that earlier. They have an office. So basically, make an appointment to try and come and see and have a talk. Come in for a chat. You know, take away what you can from it, what you will from it. And I was also asked to mention our donate button, considering the fact that we do run entirely on donations, and we actually have a very, very high electricity bill at the moment, but that's another issue. However, we have apps now at the moment on Google Play and iPhone. You can download the Hub app, which you can donate through, and we also have a donate button via our website as well. But as they say in a certain place, every little helps, and every penny goes towards the Hub. As I said, everybody there is a volunteer, nobody receives a wage. And
and again, Martin, on behalf of myself, on behalf of the team here at Northside Today and everybody here at Near FM and all our listeners out there, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come in, for being so open, and I suppose explaining the work that the Hub does. I think, and I really, really mean this sincerely, if one person listening this morning can take something from this interview and it eases their load, it's a job well done, and I couldn't commend you highly enough for the work you're doing. I wish you well.
Thank you.
We here will keep in touch with you, and at any stage, should you wish to contact us, you can feel very, very free to do so. You have been listening for approximately the last 51 minutes to Martina Doyle from the Hub Ireland.